The Ira Kaufman Podcast is on, starring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper is here, and the boys, Ira and Lee, have got something very special planned for this podcast, number two of this week. As you saw in the headline, Mike Allstott has sat down for a very comprehensive interview. This is really part one, but I'd say part one and a half. And, you know, after the rough times of last Sunday, all the depression, after that horrible loss to the Giants, and Ira and Lee went through that, and all the pain and the decisions associated there, we decided, you know what, let's turn to the A-Train for some insight, some wisdom. He's a football sage in a different kind of way than Ira is, and a lot of good stuff. So we're excited about today's interview. And I'm going to tell you a couple of things that you're going to hear in there. But first, I wanted to remind you, of course, the podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, a Tampa tradition for nearly 60 years. And they actually are partners with Allstott. He's been buying vehicles and working with them. I've met him at charity events with Bill Curry Ford. And Bill Curry Ford has a huge buyback sale going on now through Monday. That's Monday, September 30th. They are buying cars for up to $4,000 over Kelley Blue Book value. All the details are at JoeBucksFan.com. You can also, of course, go to BillCurryFord.com and start shopping immediately. Ira himself in the flesh, will be right out there at Buffalo Wild Wings in Oldsmar to watch the game with you Sunday against the Rams. Ira will be out there at B-Dubs, 4058 Tampa Road, right close to where Hillsborough Avenue turns into Tampa Road across the Pinellas County line. Get there early. It's a 4 o'clock game. You know, you want to get there, enjoy the day, or get out there by 3 o'clock. Ira should be there then. He loves to hang out, talk, schmooze, watch a game with the Sage, cross it off your bucket list. It's always a good time. Buffalo Wild Wings, all the details are at JoeBucksFan.com. And lastly, we thank Pin Chasers. Three Tampa Bay area locations, two in Tampa Midtown, one on Hillsborough Avenue, one in Zephyr Hills. Go to pinchasers.net for all the locations, but more important, at pinchasers.net, you can see all the great daily specials, and on a lot of days, there's more than one. 60 years of Pin Chasers family-owned business. Dollar Mania is Monday night, starting at 9 o'clock. Bring $6, you get a wristband, and then you can enjoy dollar games of bowling, dollar draft beers, hot dogs, Pepsi. All the details are there. And, of course, you never pay for shoes at Pin Chasers ever. They've got the Sunday Breakfast Bowl, one of my favorites, pinchasers.net. Now, the A-Train, Mike Allstott, he goes into talking about Ronald Jones. He goes into talking about Shaq Barrett. He goes into some of the things he's seeing from the offense, and he dives into a lot of X's and O's on the running game, not specifically the Bucs running game right now per se, but just running in general. A lot of great insight. I really enjoyed hearing him talk about Shaq Barrett and put some perspective on what Barrett is doing, and there's a lot more from Allstott as well. This is, like I said, part one and a half. On Allstott, we saved a chunk, about 10 minutes, to run later in the year with a little less timely stuff that I think you'll enjoy. So we appreciate your support of the Ira Kaufman Podcast, which you can find on iTunes, Podbean, Google Play. Subscribe for a free alert like thousands of you do. We appreciate how well the podcast performs all the time. And as far as picks, game picks for this Sunday, well, the traditional game pick segment just is not going to be here because Ira, Lee, and I, we don't think the Bucs have much of a chance in Los Angeles. So that's the pick. Rams win. I pray we're wrong. We hope we're wrong. You know, Lee sometimes mentions on the podcast, anybody who thinks we don't cheer for the Bucs, they don't really get it. It's agony over here at Joe Bucs Fan World Headquarters. And on a business perspective, fans love to read about a winner. They get jazzed up about a winner. They want to consume everything on the internet they can about a team that wins, not when a team chokes away a victory at home and all the depression that we've dealt with as Bucs fans. But can the Bucs win this game Sunday? Yeah, why not? I've watched the Rams game now from last week. Jared Goff's been trying to throw the ball away. The Browns couldn't capitalize, and the Bucs can put up points. And when you can put up points, you can beat anyone. They're big underdogs. They deserve to be big underdogs. Let's hope the secondary bounces back. Oh, boy. Who's going to cover Cooper Kupp? That should be a fun one, Cooper Kupp against the Bucs. But you know what? We've got weapons as well. And I have a little feeling, I'm just going to throw a little feeling out there. I think you're going to see Jameis Winston scramble and run and make some more plays with his feet in this game, especially the way the Rams play defense and the way the Bucs have approached their offense so far this year. All right, let's get to the A-Train himself. The interview is in progress, even though it's a podcast. Mike Allstott sitting down with Ira Kaufman and Lee DeKemper.
Your overall thoughts on the Bucs offense, the state of the offense? And Ronald Jones is looking pretty good, Mike.
Obviously, when you look at the stats, I mean, you have Jameis and Evans got the 1-2 punch, right? 146 yards, 150 yards in the first half. And then I looked at the combination of the running backs and Jones, between Jones and Barber. You know, that's a run attack, you know what I mean? And I know that the run game is very strong coming into this game, you know, for the first two.
Yes.
And Jones is looking good, and Barber, and that 1-2 punch. And then you had Jameis, who had a... I feel he had a solid day. You know what I mean?
He
had a solid day. He had a couple of throws I wish he probably wish he could have back. But you know, him connecting with Mike Evans and stuff. But again, you know, I think we got to keep on punching it in the second half is with keeping that going.
Mike, as far as Ronald Jones is concerned, Mike, you've been around a lot of times where a player's first year, it's a feeling out. You got to make the transition from college to pro. It's not easy. You got to build your confidence that you belong. So you can understand why Ronald Jones would struggle maybe as a rookie, and all of a sudden, Mike, in year two, he looks like a different player.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a different game when you first come in. I mean, you got to adapt to the game. It's different than college. I mean, it's really different. I mean, I know the speed is probably similar, but even the speed in pros is a top notch unless you played at a higher level in the collegiate level. But probably going in the offseason, he learned how to read defenses, right? Mm. Understand it, you know, film review, you know, see the keys. There's different keys. When you're a young guy, you really, and that's why I keep on telling my son and, you know, a lot of my kids now that I coach, is understand where the safety's at. Read your keys. See this, see that. And maybe he didn't know that. I'm not sure. I'm not know his past, but maybe you got more in a film room, and even weekly get in a film room. Hey, when they're in this, they're going to do this. And when they're in that, they're going to do that and stuff. And, you know.
So you're not thinking when you get the ball that
way. Right. Instincts happen, right? Instincts happen. You keep your eyes on, you know, on the hole and stuff like that. And then, obviously, you know, you can let your natural ability take place. But, you know, with your preparation beforehand.
How much does confidence help?
Confidence is huge. You know, don't get me wrong. Confidence is huge, especially when you have the confidence of the coaching staff, right? When you know you're the guy. When you're not, then your confidence is there because, you know, if you don't do what you're supposed to do or don't get the opportunity to do what you're supposed to each and every time, right, you don't know when your next opportunity is going to be and stuff like that. And it can play. It can be hard times.
Okay.
You know,
hard Mike, times. Talk a little bit about the timing between a running back and an offensive line. It's a very precise thing. You can't be ahead of the play. You don't want to be too far behind the play. How do you develop that right timing?
Everything from snap to handoff, you know, is footwork, right? You have to have footwork, and I call it slow to go. I tell my running back slow to go. Again, you know, your first two or three steps is slow to go. You can't be too fast for the development of the line. What's going to happen, right? And again, by you coming here, you can get the Mike Backer or the Sam Backer to get over top to get the big cutback lane and stuff like that. So again, roll it. I mean, our old 93 belly, right, or 93 weak play, both of them going each way. You roll that ball, you get some of these guys going, you come over the top. But if you're just going to freaking put your head down and go and right in the middle and hit the little gap and you're waiting for the backside cut, you know what I mean? So again, you got to, obviously, as a running back, you have to see what's going on ahead of you in the front with the defensive lineman, but at the same time, you got to see what's going on with the Mike Backer and the Will Backer, Sam Backer, to the play side. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's eyes and it's you know, it's your footwork. And I always say slow to go. And we always hit that, you know, hit the hole, you know, set it up, then hit it.
All right, Mike. Yeah. Bill Curry Ford. It's right up the road from the stadium.
Loyal. Loyal as all can be. You know, they found my daughter's car. It wasn't a Ford. She wanted it. She had her dream car set on something else. But they said, hey, we'll get it for her. And they found it for her and made a big deal about it with the bow and everything like that. It was unbelievable. That's just been the experience. You know, I was hanging out with Bill on Sunday, you know, in between Rondé thing and the ceremony. So we were down outside. He has a little tailgate. We were hanging out with Bill. We're just, you know, just talking. You know, he's talking fishing. You know what I mean? Let's go fishing and do all that stuff. They're just a great, humble family. You know, I'm very blessed to be with them.
Mike, for people that don't know GM, he's one of the great Buck fans in the world. Mike, he lives and breeds Bucks.
Sean's great. I was just there last week. That's all we did, is talk about, you know, yeah. I had a couple questions in the car. But we were just talking Bucks, and he just loves sports. He loves, you know, Sean's great for the Curry family and what he's doing. He's very intense. He's very, very intense, and I love it. You know what I mean? And
how accommodating are they, Mike, if you go in a customer, not sure what they want, and what do they like to deal with?
I got Mario. Mario's great. He's my guy, Jennifer. Kind of like pointed him and my guy. Every time I needed something, Mario would take care of me. And then obviously Sean comes in and stuff. And then the accommodations, but I'm talking to all the salespeople, you know, the people behind there and stuff like that coming in. And I mean, they're just like, hey, you need anything? You need a bottle of water? I mean, it's just, it's the whole experience.
It's concierge service. No, concierge service, that's true.
No, it's great. I mean, the whole setup when you walk in, it is. It's all about the customer and the relationships and stuff like that and the feeling, the experience, and walking out with a smile. If you buy a car or not, right? You've been treated the right way.
I wish Buck fans had that coming out of Sunday's game, Mike.
The first two games and the first half of the recent game, just your overall thoughts on defense and how much better it is than it has been in recent years.
You got Barrett, you know, which is very, very impressive. I've been with Hall of Fame defensive linemen, you know, my whole career. 8 sacks in 3 games, 4 in 1 game. Incredible, right?
Have you seen a guy just take over like Barrett has? I guess Sapp would be
Sapp's done it, you know. And Derek many times against the Packers, you know, I've seen him have that, you know, with Favre have that.
Yeah, he had that 3-sack game against Favre in the playoffs.
Yeah, we have seen them take over games, but a guy that has been consistent in 3 games, and, I mean, there's guys that get 12 sacks in the whole 16-game season.
That's a big year.
Oh, that's huge. Yeah. I mean, that's big-time money right there, right? I mean...
And he might be looking for big-time money.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah. And so everybody's right now is, don't get me wrong, even who they're playing next. Who are they playing next?
L.A.
L.A., yeah, that's right. We talked about that. So the Rams, they're talking about Bear right now, right? But, you know, what he's done in the first 3 games... And I guess that's what that defense entails, that 3-4 defense with that outside linebacker. He's going to be that guy, right? And coming from every different angle, a lot of blitzes, being aggressive on defense, and putting a lot of pressure on the quarterback is what you expect.
Mike, what was it like for you, and how often were you asked to block up that blitzing linebacker on 3rd and 8 or whatever? Maybe most of the time, maybe you were out on a pattern or whatever, but... Talk a little bit about your experiences about blocking some of these edge rushers.
And that's what the defense wants. They want the mismatches, especially when you have basically a stand-up. Is he a linebacker or is he a true defensive end, right? Yeah. And nowadays, you know, they're looking for that, you know, speed guy.
You got a Chris Bowman or something.
Right.
You know.
No, of course. You really try not to put that, but that's what the 3-4 is going to give you. It's going to give you that mismatch, especially when you're given – Those Mike and Sam in the box, right? And they're going to come, and they got blitzes, and the line's got to slide to them, and then you're going to be mismatched on a Barrett or, you know, another guy like that, you know. But that's what was probably in training camp and overall the biggest situation that running back coaches love is running backs picking up blitzes. More so than anything. It's incredible.
Everybody can do it.
When you go up there and you can smack the guy at the line and you can sustain, you know, the play and keep the play going, you know, and you put your head in there, they love that. I mean, when we went to linebacker in camp and running back blitz pickup and stuff like that, and it's one-on-one. I mean, it's not – there was no line in there and stuff like that. It's not like – it's like one-on-one.
There's nowhere to hide, Mike.
There's no way to hide. And when And everybody's going nuts. And it's and I tell my running back that because we played a couple tough teams with some good linebackers and stuff like that that blitz a lot. I'm like, hey, if you want to be seen at the next level, it's not all about carrying the ball. You got to go in there and smack that guy, right? And you got to stop him. You know, that's the other part of the game for, you know, a Jones or a Barber. You know what I mean? That mm-hmm. Done. But, again, you know, as an offense guy, you're trying – as an offensive coordinator, you're trying to keep those mismatches off of, you know, your mm-hmm. running backs with the big end or something like that. But we are – I did a lot of chipping, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, they're going to chip, you know, Barrett. They get on Barrett. Yes. Before they release, they're going to give him a flipper, right, and make sure that he stays on the tackle rather than speed rushing around and stuff like that. So that's the biggest thing you're probably going to see, that they're going to put the back to Barrett's side from now on.
You know, one thing I noticed about Barrett, Mike, and I think all outstanding rushers, yeah. Simeon used to do this, Mike, when they go around that edge, they kind of make themselves small.
Oh, no, they get low.
What a lean they got, yeah. You know?
Well, they get, exactly. They're 3 feet off the ground, right? They're turning their shoulders, they're keeping their feet. It's kind of running that circle. If you ever see when they run those drills, those agility circles, right? And they've got that lean, right? And they can almost touch the ground, and they're coming up. It's hard to block a guy.
And that makes it tough for that big tackle.
Yeah, I mean, when you have a 6'7" tackle, and you're playing at 3 foot, right, it's tough. And you get the advantage. But it's all about pad level. It really is. You know, the first step, too. First step in pad level.
Mm-hmm. Is the challenge for Barrett now, you know, before he was unknown, maybe coming into the Giants game, like, well, we need to look about him. Look at him, make sure he's on.
He was a part-time player in Denver. Part-time.
Yeah, he was unknown up until.
There's no question. Like I said, they're gonna either put it back to his side, or they're gonna slide the line to his side and then take the back to the other side.
You know, or a tight end, Mike?
Tight end back. You know, same thing, right? So, you know. Another a six blocker, they're going to get to him, and they're going to slowly release, you know, if the guy's in the pass route, they're going to slowly release the tight end, right? Chip, and then go out and flip.
Doesn't that open stuff up for other guys on the Bucs?
No, it does. It's unbelievable. Yeah, so you can, right? So, again, and we talked about that, you know, guys were getting on set, and that's where Booger came through, right? And then all of a sudden they're double teaming Simeon Rice, right?
Yeah.
And that's where Sepp came in, and vice versa, and all the guys across the, you know, the, and that's why our defense line was so successful, because they all pretty, you know, with White and Simeon.
You're going to get one on ones.
You're going to get one on ones. And then we had, and when I played, we had the defense line was more capable of beating a one on one, obviously, but there's going to be one guy that's going to get doubled, right? And you know what? That was the greatest thing about us, because we were a team. We were team-oriented when it came to our mindset and our heads, right? You know, you take him, the other guy's free, we win.
Mike, I got a question for you about the position. And I'm part of the story here because, Mike, I want to congratulate you. You are you're on the preliminary Hall of Fame list for Canton, and you've got some powerful credentials. Just look at how many Pro Bowls you've been in. And that's always brought up in that discussion room. Mike, it says fullback next to your name, Mike. I don't want to say it, so I'll let you say it. You were not a traditional blocking fullback, Mike. How much pride do you take in how you played that position and maybe change that position?
I take a lot of pride in the versatility side of how I can play the game. There's a lot of people, as I was growing up, going to collegiate ranks and then even coming in with Dungey where, hey, we want you to be that full-time fullback. And I was that full-time fullback until I showed my potential into be able to carry the ball, you know, receive the ball.
That's right.
And do some stuff with the ball to make positive yards and make some, you know, help my team move the ball down the field. But, you know, and then that's where I was able to be going into, again, going in with another fullback like Lorenzo in 98, right?
Yeah.
And then the other fullbacks that were, and then going back when we had, you know, Mork and Michael and stuff like that. So, and Cadillac. So, I was very fortunate player to be able to do it all and have the ability to do it all. God bless to doing all that because of, you know, in certain times I didn't come off the field a lot.
You know, Mike, teams that play fullbacks today, and there aren't a lot of them.
Yeah.
But Mike, the ones that do. The fullback ends the season, you look at the stats, the guy carried the ball 3 times.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of third and ones maybe. You plunge straight ahead. You weren't like that. It was a totally different situation with you.
Well, yeah, no, I didn't have the traditional just when I got the ball, the fullback belly play. You know what I mean? I had, you know, the stretch, you know, I had the toss, I had the power, you know. I was able to do those things, but, you know, and I really do pride myself on being able to go in there as a fullback and going in there for Pittman and Dunn and all my other backs that I played with and staying on the field with them and not being able to do some different things. Then coming out of the backfield as a fullback and catching the ball, but at the same time, dot in the eye. When Wark and I were playing, even with Michael and I were playing, it was a situation who had the hotter hand that game. Right, and sometimes, you know, I had the hotter hand, so I was carrying the ball. So that means, you know, Michael or Pitt or Work, you know, they didn't get too many touches and stuff like that. And it's kind of like maybe like on what happened Sunday with Jones and Barber. Jones was hot, right?
Yes,
he was running the ball well, right?
The game before, Barber had 23 carries,
right? So again, I mean, who has the hotter hand? Who's feeling it? You know, I mean, who's got it going on and stuff like that? And that was a lot of situation with me, but when. If Warwick was hot or Mike was hot or Cadillac was hot, you know what I mean? I got to be in there with them and pave the way and do some good things with them and catch the ball here and there and stuff like that. But, you know, vice versa. And very blessed to be able to have that type of ability, a God-given ability to be able to stay on the field the whole time and then play that fullback, play that halfback, play that H-back, you know, play the whole, you know, the whole role.
Didn't Gruden line you out wide a couple times because he saw a mismatch?
Yeah, a couple of times, but I was more of a just stand up
okay.
And run straight.
Mike, the first Buck touchdown, you know, in the great Rondé Barber game in Philly, which is the iconic play, no question.
Yeah, yeah.
But Mike Allstott scored the first Buck touchdown in that game, tied the score, right, 7-7.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the way, the game couldn't have started any worse for the Bucks with the guy, you know, running the kickoff back to the 20, and then they scored, I think, on the first snap.
Mitchell, right?
Yeah. Mitchell ran it back, and then a draw play, and they're in the end zone. Mike, you were probably thinking, you can say it now, Mike, don't be afraid. Here we go again.
Yeah, right? No, it was. But I think we had a different team, you know, from the other teams, you know, from Mattel.
And they had beaten you in the regular season, Mike. But Brooks said, we'll be back.
Oh, yeah, we'll be back.
What was the play you scored on, Mike? Off left end?
Yeah, it was a Georgia play off left. Yeah, Morris. It was a G play off the left, and I had Sapp in there as the tight end.
Ah, nice.
I had Bernie in there as a fullback. Yeah, we just, you know, you kind of just press it downhill play, and then you bounce it out to suck in the linebackers, and you bounce it out. We had a nice seal block on the outside, and then Bernie came around, and then I just hopped in.
And Mike, what went through your mind when Rondé Barber was running down there?
No, it was Rondé, the player he is. Again, we talked about, you know, Jones earlier in the conversation regarding him being a different player, confident, watching film. Rondé was nothing but a film guy, right?
Wow.
He was a study guy. He knew exactly. He knew your tendencies. He knew where your eyes were going. He knew the exact play. And he was always in the right place at the right time because of what his intelligence of the game was. You know,
I used to call him the smartest player in football.
No, right? You're right. I mean, he'd sit there all the time and knew what's going on, knew how to read guys. And, you know, Brooks was the same way. They knew how to read quarterback's eyes and where to be and how to be. And that's why that defense was so good. They did all that film study, and they were with each other. And, again, we might not have been the biggest, the fastest, and the strongest, but we were a group of guys that came together that prepared well, right, and took it for you know, for real each and every Sunday. And obviously that was the game for all the marbles. And then you have Rondé take it down the house for 92, right?
And you know, Mike, by the postseason that year, the offense was pretty darn good.
I mean, after the first couple of games, we're averaging about 28 points a game. Every game, though, was a different guy, though. I mean, you had Keenan, you had Keyshawn, you had JJ. I had me a couple games.
Dilger.
Dilger would come in and had, you know, in red zone, right, and then do his, you know, great blocking he did. We had, you know, the personnel were mixed in. That's what I say about our team compared to maybe this generation or whatever. Nobody got upset when somebody else was successful. You know what I mean? Because we know each other's time to come.
And Brad was a quiet leader, right?
He was a great leader, but he was like behind the scenes the best leader ever. I mean, he was the funniest quarterback. He was a serious quarterback. I mean, he just had the personality that that Matt Sharp team was the best. I mean, he was he was smart too. He knew where to get the ball. He wasn't trying to get downfield. He had Duncan dink it to, you know, us backs and then hit it over the middle.
Get it
to
out
Keyshawn,
quick.
Right? Get it over to Keyshawn, then hit a couple of deep to JJ and stuff like that. So it was he knew where to get the ball out of his hand and not hold on to it.
I think this is a big compliment for you. You know, Ivor always talks about this. You spoke about this. Brooks talks about it. The iconic play in Bucks history is Rondé returning that interception and pick six in Philly. If you ask Buck fans, I bet you'll get a lot of people say number two play in Bucks history, or at least their favorite outside of Rondé's play, your run against Cleveland that same year. That was just a broiling hot day at Raymond James. And you must have run through every stinking defender. If you ask Buck fans what their second favorite play was, I bet you'll get a lot of response. That run against Cleveland. You didn't score, but you put bruises on quite a few people.
Mike, you watch that play twice a day, Mike, on video. Tell the truth, Mike.
No, I don't have.
That was the ultimate Mike Allstott run, I think. You got about, what, 25, 30 yards?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
Wasn't there one against the Redskins, too, near the goal line? I don't know.
I know that same year against Atlanta. You know, Michael Vick came in, the great soundbite they have of Gruden of, they always talk about the great Michael Vick, but they don't talk about the greatness of this defense. But that game, I think you scored a touchdown or you got tackled near the goal line. But very similar, you ran through about eight or nine guys.
I get goosebumps thinking about it just because I love the game so much and love the times with my players and being on the field and that gridiron. And that was my time. That was my opportunity. And, you know, during the end of the game, in situations like Cleveland, you know, if it's the 4-minute drill or if I'm the closer or whatever.
Don't give them the ball back, Mike.
Right. Yeah. And it was my opportunity. And again, everybody understood their role, right? Everybody's understood the role. And it's just, you know, I didn't want to give up my role at the time, you know what I mean? And when I get the opportunity, I always took it to heart. I always wanted to, you know, do well for my team and be able to, you know, secure the situation that we had, maybe like in a Cleveland game or the Washington on the goal line, because I was the goal line back.
Oh, that's the Redskins, the playoff game. Yeah.
Mike, one last thing for me. Give me your thoughts on this, Mike. It's a big topic, and we noticed, we noticed it so much on Sunday. Mike, we live in Florida. You know, the old adage is there's nobody from here. Everybody came from, whether it's Illinois or whatever, New York, Jersey. And they root for their old teams, Mike. And we saw it with all the blue. Mike, does that bother you? Was it like that in the glory days? How do we turn that around? Is it a big deal or is it overblown?
I saw it my first year, especially my first game in Old Sombrero when I played Green Bay. And it was younger.
And you didn't know it was going to be like that, right?
Oh, no. It was packed house. I mean, Sombrero was packed.
Wow.
It was yellow and green. And, you know, I didn't know anything better. I just wanted to go out there and play football and whatnot and do the thing. But as time went on, right, especially, all right, we went 1-7, but we were doing good. We were competing and stuff like that. But the second half of the season, all right, we went, 6-8 or 5-8 and stuff like that, 5-7. We finished the season 6-10, and then we had the playoff year,
right,
where we beat Detroit at home in 97. And it was all pewter and red. Oh, it changed. It was just because we were in a community. We were doing things. We were winning. We were doing a positive vibe. And we were competitive. And then you just saw the snowball just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And
so they were coming to see the Bucks.
Yeah.
Not the other team.
Yeah. No, it was. I saw a lot of blue there the other day. Saw a lot of blue.
But that's about winning, right, Mike?
No, it is. No. Yes, it is. And but I think it's, you know, about doing it the right way each and every day. You know what I mean?
Dungy was that huge of an influence. That community, you brought that up several times.
Yeah, read his book. Read his books. He talks about community a lot. And his biographies that he wrote and stuff like that, especially his first one, and some of the things about us and how he translated us into it. And it was great. And he got the community staff and to be able to push that on us and do different things. And it's just something that needs to be done.
And Mike, how about all these guys for the most part, they still live here.
Oh, yeah.
They still live here.
So you know, during the reunion at the Rondé thing, right? Rondé Barber thing before the game, talking, Flip, he was in Atlanta. He moved back, right? Of the 100 guys, I don't know how many guys are there, you know, 50, 60 guys are there. It just seemed like everybody I was talking to, yeah, I used to live here. I'm coming back now.
Yeah, I'm going to live on the beach.
I'm coming back. And then the main core really stayed here. You know what I mean? And the main guys stayed here and were here a lot.
Not a bad place to live, Mike. Not a bad place to live.
Yeah, I'm not going to shovel snows in Chicago, all right? Driveways in Chicago.
That's why I always tell people, this beats scraping windshields.
Right? So, yeah, no, I get to go up and see the cold a couple times a year when I go to Western Michigan, watch my boy play, or go home.
Mike, we can't thank you enough.
No, it's fun.
Can't thank you enough for your time. Mike, you haven't carried the ball in a few years, but Buck fans are never going to forget you.
All right, our thanks to Bill Curry, Ford, Pin Chasers, and Buffalo Wild Wings, where you can find Ira Kaufman on Sunday in Oldsmar on Tampa Road. Go to buffalowildwings.com for the menu and the location, but easy stuff. It's free. It's fun. Watch the game with Ira. BillCurryFord.com. Start shopping there right now. They've got that incredible buyback sale going on. See some of the details at JoeBucksFan.com. And Pin Chasers, all their great daily specials. Always impress at pinchasers.net. Podcast continues next week. We have more from Allstott, maybe next month, maybe the bye week. That's probably a good time to do some of the other stuff Allstott had to say. Bucks fans, hang in there. Hang in there. I appreciate those who have wondered where my voice is on the podcast. We got a lot going on at Joe Bucks Fan World Headquarters. I have not disappeared. I have not dropped off the face of the earth. I know Ira loves when you watch him on Fox Sports Sunday, 10:30 a.m., Channel 13, Fox 13. It's a good show. It really is, with former Bucks cornerback Ricky Reynolds and Scott Smith, the Fox host, not the Buccaneers.com writer. And Ira's on Spectrum Sports, Bay News 9, 10:30 p.m. every Monday night. He's on the Mad Dog Russo show, Sirius XM Mad Dog Channel, 5 o'clock on Wednesdays for his entertaining, to say the least, spot there on national radio. And The Sage, of course, you can find him at Tampa 2, The Identity Tampa Bay, his show with Derek Brooks that you see on JoeBucksFan.com. We appreciate all the Sage supporters. Feel free to leave a review for the podcast on your platform of choice or even on JoeBucksFan.com. Of course, all naughty words get X'd out on our website, but we appreciate your support of the podcast, of everything Ira, and let's get an upset victory on Sunday.